Okay, so you guys sent in some really interesting stuff for us to look at this time.
Oh, yeah.
This Rogers v. Lowe's L'Enfant Plaza hotel case from back in 1981.
Right.
It's pretty wild. And it got us thinking a lot about, how the legal system first started to deal with like workplace harassment, kind of outside those traditional like discrimination claims.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot to work with here.
Yeah, we
We've
do.
got the actual court excerpts, a really detailed case brief, and just a standard legal brief to kind of break it all down.
Yeah.
So our goal for you today is to try to help you understand how this case kind of carved out like an early path for holding employers and harassers accountable
Yeah.
using like existing legal principles,
Right.
even before some of those more specific federal laws we think of today were really on the scene.
Exactly. And, this is a perfect example of how lawyers can get creative and use what we call these common law tort claims, these basic legal principles about wrongs against individuals, like assault, battery, invasion of privacy, to really tackle issues that are popping up in the workplace. It shows that even these older legal ideas can be surprisingly useful when you've got these new situations that don't fit perfectly under those specific laws.
So let's kind of set the scene here a little bit.
Okay.
So we've got Norma Rogers. She was an assistant manager at this restaurant called the Greenhouse Restaurant, and it was inside the Lowe's L'Enfant Plaza Hotel.
Okay.
Now, over about 2 months, she alleged that her supervisor, James Devers, was behaving really, really badly. We're talking like sexually suggestive comments,
Yeah.
notes. He was even like slipping these lewd notes into menus
Let's.
and her
Oh
purse.
my gosh.
And beyond that, there were claims of him like physically pulling her hair,
No.
touching her inappropriately, and like really invasive, lewd phone calls, both at her home and at work.
Oh my goodness.
It's just like constant and unwanted intrusion.
Yeah. That's awful. And what's interesting is that she didn't just sit there and take it. She actually reported these things internally to Randy Gottenban, who was the food and beverage manager. But she claims that at first nobody really did anything about it.
Oh, wow. So nothing happened.
Right.
And then on top of that, it got even worse.
Really?
She said that Devers actually threatened to fire her for reporting him.
Oh no.
So finally, hotel management did something, but the options they gave her were not great.
Oh, really?
They said she could keep working with Devers, but they'd like monitor the situation, or she could transfer to a night position, which paid more.
Okay.
But obviously, she didn't like either of those options.
Yeah, I mean, who would want to either stay in that situation, even with somebody watching over them, or have to totally change their schedule and their job just because somebody else is being
I mean,
inappropriate?
it's not really a choice, is it?
Right.
So she decided to take it further.
Okay.
She filed a complaint with the EEOC, and then she sued in federal court.
Okay, so the case goes to court. And what's the big question the judge has to figure out?
Well, the big question was, did the things she described actually count as these tort claims,
Right.
which are, these long-standing legal principles that we were talking about?
Exactly.
And does the federal court even have the power to hear this kind of case in the workplace?
Right.
Now, naturally, the hotel wanted to get the case thrown out. So they filed what's called a motion to dismiss.
Yeah, and what were they saying?
Basically, that even if everything Rogers said was true, it didn't legally add up to the torts she was claiming,
Right.
or that a federal court wasn't the right place to sort it all out.
Yeah, because those things usually go to state court. So what did the judge say?
Well, the Judge Green, she didn't completely agree with the hotel.
Okay.
She actually said no to dismissing most of the tort claims that Rogers had brought,
Wow.
but she did dismiss the federal claims that were based on sections 1981 and 1983 of the U.S. Code, and also a claim under the 13th Amendment.
Interesting.
So let's dig into those tort claims that did survive.
Okay, sounds good.
So the first one is invasion of privacy,
Right.
specifically something called intrusion upon seclusion. So how did the court connect Devers' alleged actions to that legal idea?
Well, here's the thing. The court said your privacy can be invaded not just physically, like somebody breaking into your house, but also through all this unwanted communication aimed at your personal life and your private spaces. So in this case, those phone calls to her home and those notes she was getting, they could be seen as crossing the line into an unreasonable intrusion.
So it's like invading a space where she could reasonably expect to be left alone.
Exactly. And the court used this standard, this legal standard, an intrusion into spheres from which an ordinary person could reasonably expect exclusion.
Right. So like your home, your personal stuff.
Right. Those are private.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You should be able to expect privacy there.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting. They said it didn't have to be a physical trespass. It was just the intrusion itself that mattered.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was that the communication was unwanted and offensive.
Yeah.
And it was aimed at her private life and space.
Right.
That was enough to maybe count as unreasonable intrusion.
Okay, so then there's the assault and battery claim.
Right.
We always hear those together, but they are different legal ideas.
Yes, they are.
Can you explain the difference in this case?
Sure. Assault is basically making someone reasonably afraid they're about to be hurt physically.
Okay.
So Dever's threats could be assault because they could have made Rogers scared that he was going to hurt her.
Right.
Battery, on the other hand, is the actual unwanted touching.
So like pulling her hair and the other inappropriate touching?
Exactly. That would be battery.
And the court said that intent was important here.
Yes. That's key for both assault and battery. They said the defendant must have intended to interfere with plaintiff's personal integrity.
So it doesn't mean he had to want to cause serious injury.
Right.
But he had to intentionally do the thing that made her afraid of being hurt.
Yes, for assault.
Or intentionally touch her.
Right, for battery.
Okay, so then there's intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Oh, yeah. IIED.
That one seems really hard to prove.
It is. It's a really high bar to clear.
What was it about this case that made the court think it might actually apply here?
Well, the behavior has to be really, really bad.
Like how bad?
Outrageous in the extreme.
Wow.
Like way beyond what's acceptable in society.
Okay.
So the court thought that maybe Dever's abusing his power as a supervisor to harass her, like that could meet the standard.
That's intense.
They even used this phrase, beyond all bounds of decency.
So it wasn't just offensive or inappropriate.
Yeah.
It had to be shocking.
Yeah, truly appalling.
Okay, and they know it's hard to prove.
Right. They said these claims often fail.
But in this case, they thought the harassment was severe enough.
Yes, especially because he was her boss.
To let it go to trial.
Right.
Now, what about the claims that the court dismissed?
Okay.
You mentioned sections 1981 and 1983 of the U.S. Code and the 13th Amendment.
Yeah.
Why didn't those work here?
So section 1981 is about racial discrimination.
Okay.
Specifically in contracts.
Uh-huh.
And since this was about sexual harassment, not race, it just didn't fit.
Okay, so what about 1983?
That one says you can't violate constitutional rights if you're acting for the government.
Okay.
Like a state official or something.
So because the hotel was private?
Exactly. There was no state action.
And they dismissed the 1983 claim.
Right.
And the 13th Amendment.
Well, that's about slavery.
Right.
And the court said, even though this was bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't like slavery.
Okay. And some of the defendants in the case were also dismissed.
Oh, right. They had to figure out which part of the company was actually in charge of the hotel.
Right. Who was running things day to day. Exactly.
And they decided it was just the Lowe's Washington Hotel Corp.
And they dismissed the other ones.
Right. And there was also that thing about how much money Rogers was asking for.
Oh, yeah. The damages.
Right.
So back then, to sue in federal court, you sometimes had to be asking for a certain amount of money.
Wow.
The hotel said she wasn't asking for enough to be in federal court.
Okay.
But the court looked at what she claimed had happened to her.
Right. Her emotional distress and all that.
Yeah. And they thought she could plausibly be asking for more than the limit.
And they didn't dismiss it.
Right.
They also talked about the hotel's offer to transfer her.
Uh-huh.
They said that didn't really solve the problem.
Right. It didn't fix the harm, she claimed.
And the case still had to be decided.
Right.
So big picture.
Okay.
What are the key takeaways from this case?
Well, first, even if there aren't specific federal laws about it, people who are harassed at work can still use these common law tort claims.
Right.
It was a big step in recognizing that this kind of behavior causes real harm. And second,
employers have to act quickly and decisively.
If they know about harassment.
Right. If they don't, they could be in trouble legally.
And third,
this case suggests that supervisors and individuals can be held personally liable.
Wow. So it's not just the company.
Right.
So for the law students out there, what should they pay attention to?
You really need to know these basic tort claims inside and out.
Okay.
And notice how her lawyers use a bunch of different legal arguments.
Yeah.
Even though some were dismissed, the state law ones worked.
So be creative and think of all the options.
Exactly.
This is fascinating. It shows how the law around workplace conduct was changing.
Yeah, and it lays the groundwork for later developments.
Like the idea of a hostile work environment.
Right.
Which, by the way, for our next deep dive,
oh, yeah,
we're going to be looking at Meritor Savings Bank v. Vinson.
That's a big one.
It's a landmark case that really established hostile work environment as sex discrimination under federal law.
It'll be interesting to see how it builds on what we've been talking about today.
Yeah, it shows how these common law ideas and the specific laws work together.
Exactly.
So as you think about this case,
mm-hmm.
think about all the different legal tools we have to deal with bad behavior at work.
Yeah.
And the responsibilities that employers and employees have to create respectful workplaces.
Absolutely.
And how these old common law principles can sometimes be the key to getting justice.
When the newer laws don't quite cover it.
Right, Shan. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
It was great to be here.
See you next time.